Are you losing confidence in Mike McDaniel? Did you love Mike McDaniel the first two seasons? Were you always leery? Have you lost confidence? Like, where are you on him?
So I think it's two different discussions. I love Mike McDaniel, the human. I love the story. I love everything that he brings, like what he's about, his value. Like, just the idea that you meet players and people on their level and you're able to work with them individually. Mike McDaniel, the head coach, has concerned me since the end of his first season, and I wanted to see going into year two if some of the same issues were going to pop up again, and they did. And then now we're seeing them again in year three. And those are how many pre-snap penalties, man, and not getting play calls in quickly. And just there's just a lot of stuff that's going on with the team that unfortunately scream a lack of discipline, lack of attention to detail. And look, coaches say, oh, it starts with me. It starts with, well, it really does start with you. It really does start with the head coach. And I think, unfortunately, when, look, at the end of year one, you're looking at a coach that, even though he was the offensive coordinator, wasn't the play caller in San Francisco. So then he comes here, and it's really not just first time as a head coach, but calling plays, and you see a lot of the same operational issues. And so you give him grace year one, but it does raise a red flag a little bit. You got to see it improve in year two. I don't think that we have. And so now that we're in year three and a lot of the same issues are still there, yeah, I mean, concern level, what, 8 or 9 out of 10? Absolutely.
And Clay, what the thought, like, where they were the worst team. They were scoring like 11, 12 points a game without Tua. And then Tua comes back last week, they score, you know what, 27. And like that dynamic, you know, that dynamic of Tua and Hawk, I don't like to give Hawk credit, Clay, but I'll give him where it's done. He was like, Tua's very important to this scheme. Tua's the most important thing to the scheme. But like, I don't know what Andy Reid would do without Patrick Mahomes. I don't know what, you know, Monken and Harbaugh would do without Lamar Jackson. So like, is it alarming that our offense falls off damn near 20 points a game if Tua is not playing? And is it a structural thing with how this top-heavy roster, not even offense, this top-heavy roster has been constructed?
Yeah, I don't think that's as alarming to me as some of the other stuff. And I think when you're looking, you're right. The offense obviously looked a lot better with Tua out there. I think you could say that with any team, any good team with a good quarterback, or any team with a good quarterback that, you know, then there's a significant drop off. And we knew there was a significant drop off. I mean, we could argue all day about whether or not they should have gone out and gotten a more capable backup before the season started, and so maybe the drop-off wasn't as steep, but the bottom line is it was. So that didn't alarm me as much as I think, you know, Tua comes back, and yeah, the offense looks better. I think we also have to keep in perspective who they were playing. And it's not that Arizona's a bad football team by any stretch, but I don't think going out and losing a one-point game to Arizona makes you feel a whole lot better about the trajectory of this team than it was the week before. And not that you would feel that way after a loss anyway, but I don't think beating a run-of-the-mill middle-of-the-pack team is where the aspirations are or where they should be for this football team. I think the hope was you're not just making the playoffs, but they've talked about winning a playoff game. That's not what this team looks like right now. And I don't know that there's an obvious, clear path where between now and the end of the season they get to that point. I'd love to be wrong, but you know, I think we're going to have to see a lot of improvement in a lot of areas. And Mike McDaniel said this, Tua is not the savior. And even though he came back and the offense looked a lot better, still a lot of glaring issues with this team.
How about this? I was just reading a tweet from Joe Shad. This is so wild. I hadn't really realized this. So Joe Shad tweets out, the last time the Dolphins won at the Bills was December of 2016. It was 34-31 in overtime. Matt Moore, 233 yeah. yards. Jay Ajayi, 206 yeah. yards rushing. Devontae Parker, 85 yards receiving. Michael Thomas, 10 tackles. Cam Wake, 1 sack. Andrew Franks, game-winning field goal. They haven't won there since 2016. But I was going to ask you, before I saw that tweet, I was going to ask you, do you see a path to them winning Sunday? Because if they don't win Sunday, Adam Beasley had written a column in Pro Football Network yesterday about if they don't win in Buffalo, you kind of have to sell off the team because it just didn't work. So do you see a path Sunday?
Well, yeah, look, I'm a big believer in the any given Sunday thing, and I just think that it happens too many times in football where you say, oh, this can't possibly happen, and then it does. So, yes, I can see a potential path, but I think the greater question is there a path for this team between now and the end of the season to become a playoff-winning team, like a team that goes out there and wins a playoff game? That's where I'm having a hard time, because I think that's a little you're having to jump over a lot of hurdles there. As far as the selling off the team thing, I've never had a problem with, like, the, hey, if we're not going to win it this year, let's get what we can and even do a soft reset. I just don't think this organization is going to think that way, especially not with how they've given out the contracts, especially not with, man, I mean, I don't know what Chris Greer's level of job security is, but a lot of the issues on this team right now are personnel related. I mean, you remember him
I will say for clarification, Beasley's point in the column was you'll probably get pushback from Chris Greer not wanting to do that, and Stephen Ross needs to overrule him. And Beasley's point was, hey, you might be able to get something for Tyreek Hill and, you know, draft picks. You may be able to get something for, who else did he say? Jalen Ramsey, I guess, Teron Armstead. There's someone I'm missing that was the majority of what he said. I got to look at it real quick. I have it somewhere in my notes. But saying essentially, Raheem Mostert, yeah, that you can get rid of some of these aging veterans, and you can get draft picks because you're going to need to restock this team.
Oh, and I agree with that. Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's two separate discussions. Should they or will they? And I don't know that I see Stephen Ross coming in doing that. But if he did, I'd have no problem with that. You just go back to the off season, and I remember the chuckles, like, you know, hey, we, you know, other people are more concerned about our offensive line than we are. Well, how about now? And I think those are the kinds of things where there's been kind of this, the money hasn't been allocated necessarily to the right spots, and you see it now. And yeah, the roster is top heavy, but the reason why the roster is top heavy isn't just because you've spent a lot of money on Tyreek Hill, Jalen Ramsey, Tua Tagovailoa. Like, that's not the reason why the roster is top heavy. Roster is top heavy because you haven't drafted well. You haven't drafted well throughout, not just round one. I'm talking about throughout the course, the depth of the draft. That's where you get your back end guys. You don't get those guys in free agency. You get those guys in the draft. You develop them to where you put them out there and you feel good about putting out a guy that knows what they're doing. Those have been the issues with this team to me. Like, we can talk about Mike McDaniel and the issues there, how important Tua is. But to me, the number one issue is personnel related. It's just there are too many holes, and I think it really does come back to not drafting well enough.
But Clay, so here's where I'm at, which is, let's say the Dolphins somehow do turn this around and make the playoffs, right? You're saying any given Sunday is a real possibility, which I don't disagree with you, but then I think we've seen this for 3 years already, that what they've built, as you're suggesting and as you're saying, isn't good enough to compete with the top dogs in the AFC and the AFC East, really. So if they do somehow at least get to the playoffs and salvage this season, aren't we just buying into false hope again that at some point this core can actually produce the results that we all want to see come December and January? Like, to me, it's almost buying into fool's gold again with this team, which is what happened last year.
Right, yeah, and then look, as we sit here on, what, October 29th? Yes, I agree. You know, I think the question would then become, okay, if they got there by the end of the season, is it because something happened that makes you drastically view? Because, I mean, look, where they are right now, they're going to have to really go on a run, and something's going to have to be a lot different for this team that by the end of this, if they get to the point where they win, say, 10 games and make the playoffs, okay, well, how did it happen? Is it because you faced a bunch of backup quarterbacks and you just got lucky and backed your way in? Well, then yes, I would look at it kind of like you. Or was there some fundamental change? The running game, like, all of a sudden becomes like this massive plus, whatever it is. Yes, I agree with you as we stand here today, but I would wait until the end and figure out what's the why. How did they get there? And that would ultimately answer that question for me.